Politics in a nonpartisan manner, of course, and any hot topics of the day. We are broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyear Buyer, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I am here with my executive producer, Jason Versace, of Rising Tide Marketing. We have as our guests tonight Ted General and Jack Latour. Ted and Jack, along with Peter Scarper, are authors of a new book, which is winging its way up the charts on Amazon, called Bay Ridge, Etc. Let's welcome Ted and Jack. Hello, Ted. Jack, how are you guys doing?
Hi. Good evening.
Yeah, pretty good. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening.
Well, it's great to have you guys on. This book just launched. I think it's a hot topic in Bay Ridge right now, very topical, and just a great thing, yet another great aspect of Bay Ridge that many people don't know about, and we're here to help you guys get the word out. Before we start talking about the book, why don't you both give a little background of the authors to our audience. Ted, why don't you tell us what you do in your off hours?
Okay, I write a weekly newspaper column for the Home Reporter and Sunset News, and it also appears in the Brooklyn Spectator.
And Jack, how about yourself?
Well, Bob, I must admit, I got a little stage fright when you told me the broadcast abilities of this radio station going all over the world. Oh, my goodness, that's wonderful. Yeah. Actually, Bob, I'm retired from the New York Police Department, and I'm also retired from the Coast Guard Reserve. And I'm filling my time taking care of my elderly parents and aunt and all the chores that my wife might have me doing. And when I find some spare time to work with Ted General and Peter Scarper, who are really the driving forces behind this book.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you both are keeping yourselves very busy. What's the reason behind this book? Tell us a little bit about this, either one.
Well, it's the third book in the series. The first book was called Strictly Bay Ridge. The second one was called Bay Ridge Now and Then. And they're published by the Bay Ridge Historical Society. And part of it is to let people in Bay Ridge know about the history of the community and help preserve some of its cultural institutions, and to acquaint people with their community leaders. There are pictures of several of these community leaders in the book, in addition to vintage photographs of places like Fort Hamilton. There's a picture of, for instance,
Senator Henry Murphy.
Senator Henry Murphy, who was quite a gentleman. He was a past congressman. He represented both Kings and Richmond County. And later he was at Brooklyn, and then was appointed as ambassador to Holland. And he later served as a state senator. In fact, Senator Street invested after him. And he's also founded the Brooklyn Historical Society, was the owner of the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, and was the president of the company that brought the Brooklyn Bridge. And I think a lot of Bay Ridgeites are familiar with the fact that the lands now known as Owlshead Park was part of his huge summer estate.
Quite an amazing gentleman from Bay Ridge, and we're very proud to have had him live in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's quite a surprise to know that we have such a tremendous historical figure that, homegrown right here. Jack, let me ask you, is it or why is it important that people know about their roots? Obviously, this must have been, something that you guys wanted to convey to your audience. Why is it important that people know something about their roots?
Well, Bob, the logical answer for that would be that you need a frame of reference to know, where you or your neighborhood was coming from to sort of be able to chart where you're going. Bay Ridge has had such a unique history, as you know from being a resident of the neighborhood for many, many years and an active member of the neighborhood. The neighborhood's held its own throughout each decade. In the decades when other parts of the city were in serious decline, Bay Ridge held its own. As a matter of fact, our biggest threat was the building of the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, where we lost a lot of grand homes, especially along 7th Avenue. But as you know, the cover of our book, we have the Verrazano Narrows Bridge very prominently displayed, thanks, of course, to Deborah Matlack, who took a wonderful picture.
That is a beautiful picture for all
our audience. It certainly is. And the bridge has now become a symbol of Bay Ridge. So it goes to show you that there could be something in the history of a neighborhood that initially everyone is concerned about, but as time goes on, it becomes an accepted part of the neighborhood and a treasured part of the neighborhood, other than that $13 toll, of course.
Yes. Well, that didn't come in the 60s, I don't think.
No, we have to do a little research on that, Bob, and find out what the original toll was and how it's gone up. But I guess everything's gone up, right?
Yeah, everything has gone up. And for our listeners, we do have a picture of the bridge up on the show page of our Blog Talk Radio program, just for that. You know, as a child, I was growing up, I lived on 75th between 6th and 7th, and fortunately, I was on the side of that block that was not taken by the city. But I remember one day there were a ton of houses there, and another day there was a big ditch in the ground. And as a child, I really couldn't understand what happened to my friends, their houses, and why there was this big ditch. But as you point out, Jack, that did have a devastating effect on the community for a while. Yet we, as you point out, we stabilized, we recovered, and now the Verrazano is really one of the many symbols of Bay Ridge. So
absolutely. Yes, Bob, that's all correct.
And, Ted, tell us, you're telling us that Bay Ridge, etc., your newest book, is one of a series of three.
Correct.
How about the first two books? What are they about?
Well, the first book was strictly historical photos, and most of the photos that appeared in that book were from glass slides that were produced by Samuel Winter Thomas. And the second book showed historic pictures. It would show like a picture of a theater. I believe there was one at 75th Street and 3rd Avenue, and it's now a supermarket. And it would show other old houses. Like, for instance, it would show the Crescent Athletic Club, which was the club for the rich and famous. They came from all over the city of Brooklyn and Manhattan, to watch major events take place. And today, that site is the site of Fort Hamilton High School. And so that would have been one of the then and now pictures in the earlier book. The earlier books were done by Peter Scarfer and Larry Stelter. It's this third book that Jack, I, and Peter collaborated on. And it's 104-page book. It's largely a pictorial book, but it has a mix of historic vintage photos of places like Fort Hamilton. It shows Bay Ridge cow pastures, a small American Revolutionary War cemetery, which is right next to where Zavarian High School is, and it even shows beaches along Shore Road. And then there's up-to-date contemporary pictures of three or four of the major Bay Ridge parades that we have. Parades like the Children's Ragamuffin Parade, the St. Patrick's Day Parade, and the Norwegian American 17th of May Parade. There's also photos of local schools, houses of worship, several taverns and restaurants, you know, to name a few.
As a matter of fact, after this broadcast, Ted and I are meeting at one of the famous taverns, the Three Jolly Pigeons Pub, where we have a meeting with another neighborhood group, the Bay Ridge Arts and Cultural Alliance. So we're keeping active.
A big arts meeting. I also understand that they may serve a little beer or alcohol down there, too. That's not a motivating decision, is it, Jack?
No comment, Jack, Bob.
Jack, tell us. You know, Ted was talking about the then and now, the Crescent Club, and now it's Fort Hamilton. Are there examples of anything, not necessarily then and now, but then and it's still then now, but it's totally been transformed and maybe something that we're using today, some sort of a building maybe or structure that we're using today has been totally transformed into something else. Are there any structures or buildings like that in Bay Ridge that we should know about?
You know, that's an excellent question, and I really wish Peter Scarpa was on the other end of the phone. He'd have answers for you. I can't think of anything right offhand. I can think of some buildings that have changed somewhat. For instance, the Hotel Gregory has now become a part of the Best Western chain, and I'm not really sure how the historic architectural concept of that has changed, but I'm sure it has somewhat. But that's still keeping itself as a hotel. As far as a building that has changed, that's still with us and has changed its mission, so to speak, totally, I can't think of anything. Can you, Ted, right off the top?
Yeah, let me jump in with one thing that stands out in my mind, and this is the Visitation Monastery and Academy. Years ago, the land there was purchased by the city of Brooklyn, and it was to detox alcoholics. And, that's about the extent of the information I have. I just know it was,
background of that.
Yeah.
You know, what comes to my mind, and maybe I should collaborate on the fourth book with you guys. I'm sitting in Hinch's the other day, the new rejuvenated Hinch's,
mm-hmm.
and they have a big mural on the wall,
mm-hmm.
and I'm pointing out to my daughter where the police station used to be and the
mm-hmm.
Diker Theater used to be. So a few, I guess, overall, probably the theaters have probably survived, although
they're right.
cannibalized into Modells and supermarkets.
Good point, Bob, yes.
And the Harbor Theater is, fitness center now.
Right. The old police precinct is one of our municipal garages now, but that can always help with the parking in the neighborhood, right?
Yes, and never enough parking, although back in the days where your book is focused.
You'll notice all those parking spaces.
Parking is not an issue. There are no meters, and there are no alternate side signs either, I see there. Ted, tell us, you were talking a lot about photos and sketches and plans and research.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. Who's the keeper of all of this here in Bay Ridge? Is there either one group, one person, or is this a culmination of a lot of different ideas you pulled together?
Well, we kind of hope that the Bay Ridge Historical Society is the custodian, and specifically Peter Scarper, who served as president of the Bay Ridge Historical Society for 12 years. And he's got quite a collection of artifacts and photos and drawings. In fact, when we sat down to put the book together, we probably had over 200 photos, snapshots of different sizes, and we had to cull it down to about 95 photos for the book. And it was a challenge. It wasn't easy to do because we could probably put out a fourth book with even more photos, and who knows, maybe somewhere down the line that might occur.
There's a tremendous amount of photos in all of the three volumes, and I'm sure there's a ton more, to be put out.
And I think it's important because the two earlier books made were very successful. In fact, Peter Scarper, while president of the Bay Ridge Historical Society, had to order reprints of the books. And It's a good resource. We haven't completed our distribution yet either, but we're going to be providing complimentary copies of the book to the local libraries and to some of the high school libraries in the Bay Ridge Dyker area. While I have the benefit of the show, I'd also like to mention, Bob Howe, if people don't know by now, is also the president of the Third Avenue Merchants Association.
That's full self-interest here.
And one of the key merchants that was very cooperative with us with this book, and they hosted a book signing for us, which was also very successful, was the Bookmark Shop on 84th Street and 3rd Avenue. And it's co-owned by the lovely Bina Valenzano and Christine Frigoletti. So we're very appreciative to all the help that we've gotten with promoting the book and for the good turnout that we had last Saturday night.
You know, Bob, Ted is absolutely correct, and Ted really had a lot in getting the publicity for this going, including the book launch at the Yellow Hook Grill. And Ted, do you want to tell them a little bit about why you chose that location for its historic significance?
Sure. Not too many Bay Ridgeites are aware of the fact that it wasn't always called Bay Ridge. Prior to 1853, the area that we're talking about, that you live in, I live in, Jack lives in, was called Yellow Hook. And because of some serious bouts with yellow fever back in the early 1800s, the village fathers and prominent landowners got together on what's called at the Yellow Hook Schoolhouse, which coincidentally was only about 200 yards south of the Yellow Hook Grill. Obviously, the Yellow Hook Grill Tavern is named after the early name of Bay Ridge. So we kind of thought that would be appropriate place to launch the book, and indeed it was.
Tremendous
cooperation from the owners of Yellow Hook Grill, Robert James Long, Steve Jackson. They were very helpful with it, and some of the elected officials, business leaders, community leaders showed up to help us get this book off the ground.
And Bob, as you know from being in the neighborhood and looking at the local papers, the press coverage that we got was really unprecedented. And I, of course, have to thank the newspapers for that. And also Ted, who, as you know, was very influential in getting things in print for us. So I got to thank
Ted. Does have his contacts.
Yes. And Bob, if I can just add very quickly so your audience knows, Peter Scarper is unable to join us. He's actually recovering from a knee replacement in one of our local hospitals here, Lutheran Medical Center. I visited him today. He asked me to extend his greetings to your audience, and I'm going to be happy to tell him that his greetings have gone literally around the world. I had no idea we had a worldwide audience.
From the North Pole to South Pole.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes, and Bob, I give Peter our best, too, and we'll have him on the show, too. He is... he could be a one-man show, actually.
Absolutely.
You know that. Yes.
I'm sorry, Jackie, I cut you off.
No, I just wanted to add one thing. Ted had mentioned the earlier books, and he had mentioned Samuel Winter Thomas. Samuel Winter Thomas was another prominent member of our neighborhood who back in the late 1800s went around with a camera and took pictures of different parts of the neighborhood. Now, you know, today, everyone has a cell phone, and it has a camera attachment. So taking a picture today is no big deal. But back then, cameras were probably very expensive and bulky. This man went literally throughout the entire neighborhood taking pictures of construction sites, of roads being built. And not only did he take the pictures, that, as Ted mentioned, they became, or back then the technology was they were on glass slides. He labeled each one, like the southwest corner of 3rd Avenue and 72nd Street. And that was such a treasure trove of information for us, and that's one of the greatest possessions that the Bay Ridge Historical Society has. We're fortunate to be in possession of his glass slides.
The pictures that you have in your books are incredible shots that really, really don't even need any explanation. The photo itself is just, transports your readers back 100 years and more.
Yeah, let me just add something to it. It's not all, it's 104 pages. It's not all pictures. We also have four pages describing early life in Bay Ridge at the turn of the 20th century, when there were no indoor bathrooms, many homes were lit by oil lamps, and how they were.
Tell us about that, Ted. That was one of the questions I was going to ask you. Give us a flavor of what it was like at the turn of the century out in Bay Ridge.
Yeah. We're looking at excerpts that were written by Grace Glenn, and she's describing early life in Bay Ridge, and she talks about the fact that there were no indoor bathrooms. Many homes were lit by oil lamps. There were large fields and farms along 3rd Avenue and 2nd Avenue, which is now called Ridge Boulevard, and mostly dirt roads crisscrossing the neighborhood. There was no mail delivery. Mail had to be picked up at the small Bay Ridge post office. And Bay Ridge in those days didn't have a resident doctor. There was a Dr. Dumont, would come from the village of New Utrecht by horse and buggy every morning and make his rounds. And if he saw a red bandana or handkerchief hanging outside a door, he would stop and you would know he would know that you were in need of assistance.
So we always have the image of Bay Ridge, the R train in Manhattan. 100 years ago, that wasn't even comparable. You're saying that there were villages and
correct. People
traveled among the villages.
The other thing to keep in mind too, that this area of Brooklyn wasn't even part of Brooklyn. The city of Brooklyn stopped, the city line stopped at 60th Street, and anything south of 60th Street was part of the town in the Utrecht. And then within the town in the Utrecht was Yellow Hook, which is Bay Ridge, with Fort Hamilton, and then the village of New Utrecht, and one other one that just escapes me offhand.
Gravesend?
Gravesend was a separate, one of the original Brooklyn towns was a separate town in itself. But it wasn't until 1894 when the city of Brooklyn annexed the town in the Utrecht that we became part of the city of Brooklyn. Very briefly, up until about 1898, then there was the consolidation into the city of New York, and Brooklyn became a borough. So while in the earlier years we were part of Kings County, but we weren't part of Brooklyn.
So was there one event or several events that caused these separate villages to all connect and become what we now know as the greater metropolitan area?
Well, I think when some of the farmlands were broken up into lots and more people moved in and the villages, first off, Yellow Hook started as a hamlet, then it became a village, and it was still part of town in the Utrecht. But as it got bigger and bigger, more government services were necessary to have a dependable water supply and electricity and all. I think it was very important for them to become a larger entity.
Absolutely. Even though it was referred to as the great mistake of 1898, Ted really hit it on the head when he mentioned the thing with the water supply. That was really one of the biggest issues that our neighborhood and the surrounding communities had to deal with. As you know, New York has probably one of the best water supplies in the world, and we had to somehow or other get connected to it, and I guess the one way to do it was to become incorporated into the greater New York area, and here we are today.
Here we are, yes.
And the need to build schools as well, because we only had like one room schoolhouses, and you just needed more money to build up the infrastructure in the neighborhood and the town.
But, Ted, isn't it interesting how some things never change? We still are pressed for school space.
Yeah, true.
They're still building schools, yes.
Yes.
As we speak.
And, yes.
Unfortunately, sometimes knocking down...
I know, the Green Church.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, can't stop progress, even though we're historians and want to save as much of our history as we can. We also realize that sometimes needs of the folks do have a pressing part in decision-making.
Yeah.
And just like Henry Murphy, when he was in his estate in Owl's Head Park, when he signed off on the building of the Brooklyn Bridge and many of the other things he did, you can't stop progress, but you do want to look back and remember how things were and try to preserve what can be preserved.
You know, I'm flipping through the first part of your book, looking at when Bay Ridge was considered a resort-type area? You had the Crescent Club, you had beaches,
mm-hmm.
and was there a casino also that was built on or over the water, or unless that was the Crescent Club?
No, that was the Crescent Club had a boathouse, roughly around 83rd Street and Shore Road.
Yes.
And, I guess a lot of high-end residents could take a launch or a boat from that boathouse over into Manhattan.
And do either of you have an idea, what, was there any triggering event that caused the changeover from, a resort area into more of a residential area? Or the social club sort of gave way to, Crescent Club became Fort Hamilton, the beaches started to go away and become developed into Parkland. What was the pressure that changed us over, that caused that change?
I'm not sure. Maybe it was competition, because then you had newer communities coming online, like Bensonhurst. It was called Bensonhurst by the Sea, and I understand they had like elaborate hotels and a resort area out there. Maybe the way Coney Island was built up, it might have pulled away from some of the waterfront activities that we had.
Yeah, Ted is right. And if I could just add one thing very quickly, Bob, on page 91 of our book, I'm just going to read one sentence that I think is going to have part of the answer to your question. It says, Fourth Avenue had few houses on it and was just one vacant lot after another, but it was lined with magnificent old willow trees, which were destroyed when the subway came. So I think one of the things that really changed our neighborhood was when we had the extension of the subway, which previously was just the trolley line. But when we had our train making stops at Bay Ridge Avenue, 77th Street, 86th Street, and 95th Street, as you know from being very savvy with the real estate development, that really opened things up for us. So I guess it was a culmination and the combination of what Ted had mentioned, and also the fact that as the subway pushed further south into our neighborhood, a lot of things changed. Land became very, very valuable. People started, as you asked earlier, about using buildings for other uses or putting buildings up in what used to be farmland.
Yeah, apartment buildings, too, making more affordable housing.
And the irony of the R train, it spurred the development back in the early 1900s, and yet now we're complaining about it as it's too far from Manhattan, it takes too long, it's too dirty, it's too slow. Go figure, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, Bob, I always like to think that that's both our strength and our weakness, that we're so far from Manhattan, and yet we're so close. So,
I think it's a strength, yes. I think it's a strength. Not many people recognize that, but I tell people we are a small town. We still have small-time town life in a big-time city, and a lot of people get it. Other people don't get it. Well, we'll let them be happy down in the Williamsburgs and the Dumbos. And
our real estate values have held very well despite what's going down, what's happening in Dumbo and Williamsburg and Greenpoint. It's still a community where a lot of people would love to live.
Absolutely, yes. Well, we only have a few minutes left, guys. What I'm going to ask both of you to tell us is the one item in Bay Ridge that might be in your book. What is one of each one of you, I want to answer, a really unusual site that people might not be aware of, but it should be on the must-see list if I'm going to go out and take a stroll tomorrow. Where am I going to go find it?
Well, I think definitely the Barkerloo Cemetery, which is a small American Revolutionary Cemetery, roughly at near McKay Place and Shore Road. Most people are not aware of it, and they're very surprised when they do discover it.
That's odd that you mentioned that, Ted. That was one of, I'm flipping through your book, and I actually went to Severian, right? This is the cemetery on the corner of Severian.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Never knew the name of it, never really... never knew it until it came out in your book. And Jack, how about you? What is one interesting little place that most people may not have either overlooked or took for granted?
Well, Bob, very quickly, I was going to also answer the Barkerloo Cemetery, but
all right.
No, that's fine. It gives me the opportunity to mention with the John Paul Jones Park, we call it Cannonball Park, right off of Shore Parkway around 4th Avenue and Fort Hamilton Parkway, you have an obelisk which almost looks like Cleopatra's Needle, if you're familiar with that in Central Park.
Sure.
And it was dedicated in 1931 to our military forces, the naval forces in Europe during World War I. And I had occasion to take a look at the base of it recently, and it was dedicated to the Dover Patrol. And if any of your listeners Google the Dover Patrol, they will see a picture of this obelisk. And the interesting thing is we have it here in Bay Ridge, and there's also an identical one in England and one in France.
Correct.
Well,
yeah.
That is fascinating. That is fascinating. Well, you both just pointed out, you know, the uniqueness and the importance of your book. We loved having you guys on. Maybe we'll have you. I'm going to do a little scouting myself now in Bay Ridge and find these places. And then we'll have both of you on, maybe even when Peter gets better and gets out of the hospital, on to have a little recap of Bay Ridge and your book. And let me commend you for doing a great service. It's very important to have a book like this and the other books that have been published on Bay Ridge because, as Jack pointed out, it's a point of reference for us to understand where we came from, where we are, and where we might go in the future.
Can I just add very quickly that all the proceeds from the book go to the Bay Ridge Historical Society, and I think that's very important to us.
A very good cause, a very good cause. Well, Ted and Jack, we appreciate you coming on the show. We look forward to chatting with you in the future, and our audience thanks you also.
Bob, thank you and your audience, and good evening to everybody.
Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity. Bye.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
Well, this concludes tonight's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and thanks to our guests, Ted General and Jack Latour, for sharing their insights with us. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.